Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
In wise stories, love is seldom a romantic tryst between two lovers. For instance, some stories from the circumpolar regions describe love as a union of two beings whose strength together enables one or both to enter into communication with the soul world and to participate in fate as a dance with life and death. The story I am about to relate to you is a hunting story about love. It is set in the frozen north. To understand this story, we have to see that there, in one of the harshest environments and one of the most stressed hunting cultures in the world, love does not mean a flirtation or a pursuit for simple ego pleasures, but a visible bond composed of the psychic sinew of endurance, a union which prevails through bounty and austerity. Through the most complicated and most simple days and nights, the union of two beings is seen as Angakok magic in itself, as a relationship through which the powers that be become known to both individuals. But there are requirements for this kind of union. In order to create this enduring love, one invites a third partner to the union. The third partner I call Skeleton Woman. She could also be called Lady Death. As such, she is another life figure in one of its many guises. In this form, Lady Death is not a disease, but a deity. In a relationship, she has the role of the oracle who knows when it's time for cycles to begin and end. As such, she is the wildest aspect of relationship, the one of whom men are most terrified. And sometimes women also, when faith in transformative has been lost, the natural cycles of increase and attrition are feared as well. And so, as usual, we are reading from Women Who Run With the Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, PhD. Welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. Thank you all for joining us and following the podcast. If you've been sitting with the stories we've shared so far of grief, resilience, and healing, I hope you're finding space to breathe, to reflect, and to remember that none of us are alone on this journey. So today's episodes is for the organizers, the caregivers, the cultural workers, the ones who show up for everybody else, even while carrying invisible wounds of their own. I'm joined today by Odilia Romero, Zapotec interpreter, cultural bridge builder, and co-founder of Cielo, Comunidades Indígenas en Liderazgo. For more than two decades, Odilia has organized with indigenous migrant communities in Los Angeles and across California. Her work has been featured in Vogue, The New York Times, Democracy Now!, and so many other places. But what grounds her work isn't the recognition. It's the deep personal understanding of what it means to lead while still healing. So today we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what it means to carry community in one hand and old wounds in the other, what it costs and what it gives back. So enough of me. I want to introduce you all to Odilia. She and I have been working together for a couple of years now, and it's been absolutely wonderful. Odilia, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. There are so many things I want to ask you, but Yeah, I want to just open the floor up for anything you want to say as any kind of opening before we jump in.
It's always a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having me. I hope to come. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, Odelia, when you think about your work and the work you've done over the years, what do you think it's taught you about yourself?
Well, I think a lot of the work that I do is very close to my heart and my own experience, especially when it comes to language, right? And being the other. I came to the U.S. many moons ago as a child. And one language. I only spoke Zapotec, very few words in Spanish, and no English. And that marked me because in my community, it was everything was in Zapotec. And I knew everybody. I talked to everybody. I never imagined that language was such a powerful tool because my universe was in Zapotec. So a lot of the work that we do at Cielo has to do with language, right? With having access to interpreter, you know, to analyze the power of language, the power of words. So, but that's, personally, it's like in my heart. And it, a lot of it has to do from my experience and the experience of Indigenous people having to be displaced and then be able to navigate a true colonial language. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so as somebody who's built a movement rooted in language, so it's, did you know that you were going to go into this organization work? I mean, you came here, you were monolingual, then you were thrust into the U.S., and now you're an interpreter. Did you know this was something that you wanted to do, or did you sort of stumble into the work?
You know, I became an interpreter out of need. I really did not even know it was a paid job or that you needed training. I mean, I became a child interpreter for my parents, for my community. I helped, I interpreted for someone to pass the barber shop exam at the age of 14. Right before I got married, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For people that don't know, you could get married at 15 legally here in the U.S., mm-hmm. which most people don't talk about, but yeah, it happened. You know?
Yeah. And did you, so you were interpreting from the age of 14 or maybe even before? And so do you
think maybe even before, because, I mean, interpreter is a very old question. Mm. You know, they have always been interpreters in the world. And most people speak multiple languages, right? When I talk to my mom, she understands multiple variants of Zapotec. When I talk to my father-in-law, he speaks multiple variants of Zapotec, but also Mixe. So most people around the globe are multilingual. Yeah. In their indigenous languages, you know?
Yes.
So, yes. I became an interpreter out of need. I didn't know it was a career. I didn't know you could get paid for it or that you needed training. So as I become an interpreter and I grow, I get married, I go back to school, I learn. For many years, I did not get paid because people would just call, oh, somebody needs help in Zapotec, and I would interpret, you know?
Yeah. So do you want... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm wondering about Cielo, and I know that interpretation is a big part of the work there, but can you talk a little bit about what Cielo does as well for people who might not know?
Cielo is a women-founded organization here in Los Angeles, and we serve as indigenous people. You know, we are creating new language as a fundamental human right. In Cielo, we believe that without an interpreter, you don't have rights, right? So it's a human right to have access to an interpreter, but we also provide a lot of services for indigenous people, from interpreting, providing food boxes, food disparity that indigenous people encounter when they come to the U.S., right? So
yeah.
In a nutshell, that's who we are.
And being a co-founder of that, how do you hold the emotional weight of the organization, holding space for other people, while also managing your own life, your own process? How do you do that?
Well, I think organizationally, we do very good. I think personally, you know, I have to get and it's constant that I'm, you know, I'm told, like, I mean, in that, you know, I kind of abandon them because I focus too much on the work. But then I think of myself, I too was not home because my parents came to the U.S. before, right? So I was part of a family separation, family reunification. And while being there, you know, I went through sexual abuse and having to, and I think it's really hard. I do now boxing, I go to healing sessions, but it's hard. I don't think it's not an easy thing to carry the work and also going through sexual abuse, and it's triggering, you know? More triggering. Right now, I'm able to talk about it without crying, without breaking down. But that has been a long process of a lot of healing, to therapy, but also having a good group of friends. And I mean, 4 to 5 times a week.
Yeah.
In order to kind of focus, and, you know, before I used to have like problems with sleeping. Now, like when I'm done with boxing, I want to nap, like, at 4, and when I have the opportunity, I nap. And I'm doing a lot of reading too.
You're doing a lot of reading. What are you reading right now?
I'm reading a lot of novels.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I'm.
What is it?
I don't know who the author is, but The Abandoner.
Oh, I've never
about
heard of
women.
That.
Uh-huh. It's a Spanish writer that talks about judgment on women who abandon their kids, right?
Oh.
And I've always wanted to understand, like, why. You know, I understand why my parents left me, mm-hmm. but I don't understand, like, okay, so you borrow money to bring the other two. What about me? In that sense, like, I want to understand more. I understand, like, the economic, politics. I fully understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know what other women or how do they should be these people. But I also try to draw, like, I too abandon my kids. Even though I'm here with them, I'm not, I guess, present enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to, so I'm reading that, which finds me very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm reading about feminists and their toxic relationship with men. I'm reading from Rosario Castellanos,
okay.
who is one of the founders of the feminism. And but she had this terrible relationship with these men, which she wrote for 17 years, and he never responded to her.
What?
It's called The Letter to Ricardo.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just want to understand this brilliant mind writing to the comeback.
Mm-hmm.
He never responds, but whenever he's there, you know, he pulls around with her. He has two kids. He never married her, but he married somebody else, but has two kids with her.
Wow. That makes me, that's so interesting, that story, right? Because the other thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, when you have, when you do work like we do, either organizing or working in the nonprofit, people don't always see us as people. They see us as caretakers, or they see us as workers. And so sometimes we wind up feeling unseen. And I feel like in some ways that can mirror early experiences that we had. And I just wonder about that lady, like, giving all that time and that effort, about feeling unseen and how that may or may not register. So I'll have to check that out. But did you feel like people understood what you were going through when you were building your organization, or even before that, when you were doing grassroots? Like you said, your kids felt like you weren't present. Do you feel like other people understood what you were going through?
I don't think people understand, mm-hmm. but this is that conflict, right? It's my internal conflict. I understand why my parents left me.
Mm-hmm.
But I always say, well, they wouldn't have left me. I don't know that I would have left an unhappy marriage, because as a child, I used to be like from one grandma's house to another grandma's house. There were no rules, no limitations, even though things bad that sexual abuse happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just kept myself busy during the day. Mm-hmm. So this kind of allows me to, leads me to always being busy and not having a space to be alone, right? Because mm-hmm. I need to be out keeping my day busy because at night something bad was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I had a lot of freedom because I was all over the town, you know, the small town, mm-hmm. and I have no goal. I'm like uncontrollable in other ways, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that my parents leaving me behind, I did benefit, but I don't think if I would have been enough, I would have come with them, rebelled in the marriage at such a young age. Because I had no reason back home. I had no attachment. I was just free. So I kind of knew what freedom was. So I didn't want to be attached to this marriage and control. So I think that's the benefit. But I also see like the other side, like I used to always keep busy.
Mm-hmm.
Really, my schedule is always so busy that I don't have time for anything. But I think it's rooted from there. But no, like as people, like they don't. People don't feel, you know, people, let's say, see my social media life, it was like all fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun too, right? So,
yeah.
I'm not gonna deny some other relatives that are going to stop, right?
Yes.
Like when you support somebody repatriate a body, when somebody calls that their kids got raped or something, nobody knows that about our work because these are confidential information. So, they don't see like everything that we go, they see the idea that comes out on the newspaper. The person that gives this amazing talk, you know, but
yeah.
They don't see what that human goes through on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Are there other things that you're doing? You said to heal your old wounds.
I read. I read, but I also read like the Four Agreements, the Mastery of Love, so the like self help books a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be a better person. Of course, we talk to you. I used to have a therapist. For a while. So those are the things I do, and I do spend, for me, socializing is very helpful. So I like hang out with my friends. I love to read. So my side job right now is being a foodie and supporting my partner in his restaurant venture, like picking up color of plates. Taking his menu, giving him feedback. That to me is a lot of fun. Having friends over, having conversation about books, and nothing related to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And with everything that you're holding and everything that you're doing, what are the moments that remind you that the work is worth it?
I get often people, they're like, hey, you know, you used to give a workshop. Like maybe 20 years ago, my kid graduated from college. Thank you so much for that program that you and your friends had. You talk about sex education. And that was very helpful. You know, I have no grandkids, Odilia, but thank you. You know, for the moment. There was one time where this woman called me. She's like, hey, can I see you? And I'm like, no, you can't come to my house. And she's like, no, but I really need to see you. An avocado tree, a back home avocado tree that she has grown for me.
Oh my gosh.
And this woman, yeah. And for me, that was so cool because, and then she brought me a soup, a particular soup that we have back home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the moments where she's like, you know, I made it because you interpreted for me. I was able to stay and now I'm here and I've never been able to say thank you to you. So this is my thanks. And you're like, damn, that's another time when I went to a community where we had repatriated a body. That team, the yellow team came, was doing all the paperwork. I just happened to be in Oaxaca.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to see the family. And just having those moments when you're like preparing to receive the body, it's just, there's no words to describe this process, you know?
Yeah. What, for people who may not know what repatriating a body is, can you tell people what that is?
Yes, a body of repatriation means like somebody that died here in the U.S. and they are sent back home. You'll help with that paperwork and navigating the paperwork of sending your loved one back home. So we do a lot of that work, you know, when people pass away here in whatever circumstance, we walk the family through the bureaucracy process to send them back home. And back home, you know, they receive them and I happened to be there and it was just a beautiful process.
Yeah. Do you ever accompany them back home or is it you just put things in order for them?
We just put things in order. This time around, I was back home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I was able to be there with the community.
And when you think about your community, what does healing look like on a collective level to you?
I think for me, when the community has a pension safe event, when they're making tamales together for the big celebration for the saint,
mm-hmm.
that's a healing process because as indigenous communities, you often get confused by Latinos, by Hispanic, by Mexican. And there's this moment where you speak your language, you eat your food, you dance your traditional music, and you don't have to give explanations. Oh, we're doing this, or we're doing that, or we make a collective tamal, we all pretend, you know, the men blend the beans, that there's a woman cleaning the leaves, there's somebody making the tortilla round for the tamal, there's somebody folding it, there's somebody putting the avocado leaves on it, there's somebody putting the other leaves on it, and somebody's making the pot. So this collectiveness is, you know, it's a very healing process for us as indigenous people in our community.
Yeah. You just made me think about when I came to your retreat in California and I had that meal with you all. And I think, was it Nopales or Nopales?
Nopales,
yeah. Yeah. When I left that, retreat, I had actually posted on social media. I don't think I had any photos, but I posted. Oh, I had photos from inside the cabin that I stayed in. But I put indigenous communities do it right because it was like I just felt so welcome. I felt so at home. It was so beautiful and it just so different. My other question is about ancestor work and the role that the ancestors play for you in the work that you do in your healing. In your organization, what is the role of the ancestors?
For me, as a Zapotec woman, ancestors are everything, right?
Yeah.
They've walked the path of resistance for the last 500 years.
Mm.
And they must have some knowledge, of course. I mean, the fact that I'm speaking Zapotec in Los Angeles means that their way of organizing or the fact that people are still doing giving gifts to Mother Earth to this day here in LA, 500 years after, for me, that's some of the lessons learned from the ancestors.
Yeah.
That have left for us. Like, we have to take care of the earth. Without an earth, we don't exist, you know?
Yes.
We have to take care of the water because without water, we don't exist.
Yeah.
We continue contaminating all our water. And I think the collectiveness, the collective work that indigenous people around the globe that have done to take care of each other. Is something that our ancestors have left us. And I think in these moments of difficulty, at the end of the day, you know, we have to watch for each other, just like the ancestors. We have to take care of each other as relatives of this world, right? The rich is not going to take care of us. The politicians are not going to take care of us. But we are going to take care of each other.
Absolutely. And how do you weave that? How do you weave that knowledge into Cielo?
Most of Cielo is indigenous. I mean, all Cielo is indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you've been raised with to honor the earth, to honor your relatives, and also to. And there's a saying, El pueblo salva el pueblo, is the community that saves the community. So at the end, we all know that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because those are the lessons from the ancestors that have left us, even though some of them are from indigenous from Guatemala or indigenous from Mexico. That is still has been the knowledge that has been passed down.
Yeah. And so what's next for Cielo?
Well, I don't know. We're living in a difficult moment, so we're just going to try to continue doing what we're doing, service and people providing that, continue the full program, because people are going through rough times right now with food insecurity, you know?
Yes.
We're going to continue working, continue existing.
And so what's one thing that you're grieving? And what's one thing that you're grateful for?
I'm grateful for my kids, for my parents. I'm grateful for, you know, having food, having a job. But I think the thing that I'm grieving is we're losing the language more and more every day.
Your native languages?
Yeah, our indigenous languages are being lost, you know, because you're being forced to speak other languages. Once a language dies, you know, there's a whole worldview that dies with it. There's knowledge there, there's names, there's recipes, there's plans. I mean, it's just because language is so powerful, it links everyday life, everyday things that we need, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that being said, how can people support you? How can people support Cielo? How can people support you?
They can follow us on social media on mycielo_.org. They could also donate on our webpage.
Okay.
They could donate funds.
And is there anything else you want to say as we come to a close that you want people to know about you or you want people to know about the organization?
Oh, that there's over 550 indigenous languages in Latin America and not everybody speaks Spanish.
Thank you. I was going to ask you that at the beginning of the call, so I'm so glad that that you shared that. Odelia, thank you so much, not just for the work that you do, but the way that you just gave us a peek into the complexity behind your organizing. And it's a reminder that movements aren't just built by strategy. They're built by spirit. You heard what she said. The ancestors walk with us. You all know I believe the exact same thing. And so before we go, is there anything you want community leaders to know, especially other women of color? Is there anything you want to leave them with?
Yeah. Self-care is very important because you need, in order to sustain the movement, you need to be well and taken care of. So go take a walk, go do some self-care moments, go read a book, because you have to be well for us to continue resisting as people of the movement.
Absolutely. Again, thank you, Odelia. You're right in the middle of stuff, so I'm so grateful that you had time to have this conversation today. And next time on Come to the Brink, we're going to explore culture, expectation, and unprocessed pain. So make sure you're subscribed. Guest episodes drop on Tuesdays. And like I always say, none of us should stand on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will see you soon. Bye.